Sorryway, Northwest London, Tuesday, Zion Teves, 22nd of December, Rav Jeremy Richards, Simcha in Uncertain Times.
Thank you. Bishus, thank you for inviting me and having me here. Truly an honour and a pleasure to be here to speak to you this morning. With your kind permission, I'd like to dedicate the following Devei Torah in memory of my dear parents, Zichronim Livracha, Lelui Nishmos Avi Mori Yitzhak Ben Nachman Halevi V'Imi Meraz Yenta Bas Yisrael Aleihem Hashalom. And my dear friend of Chavrusa Zichron Nivrocha Lelui Nishmos Avi Ben Eliyahu Aleihem Hashalom, and also a very special Rebbe of mine who was nifta only very recently, Zichron Nivrocha Harav Yitzhak Ben Shlomo Aleihem Hashalom. All of the neshamas should have an aliyah. Friends, even since confirming details of this shir at the end of last week, including its title, Simcha in Uncertain Times, the UK has been thrown into deeper confusion and uncertainty. We're all aware of the challenges that COVID has presented on many levels in relation to education, the economy, personal finances, mental health, and so on. Moreover, not only are these challenges multiple and complex, they're also bombarding us faster than we can even begin to deal with them in a thoughtful, measured way. And this overwhelming assault on our lives has made certain important basic needs quite elusive. Calm has been replaced by noise and fear, and confidence by anxiety and doubt. Yet calm and confidence are the pillars that support the essential feelings of contentment and happiness, which are so important for our well-being. In this discussion, we shall address, Nisar Hashem, the general question of maintaining simcha in our lives. At this point, however, let me acknowledge that during this period, there has, of course, been much tragedy too, which makes the discussion so much more complex, and permit me to recommend you find and listen to Rabbi Akiva Tatzi's presentation on happiness, which is deep and powerful. Some years ago, Rabbi Avram Tversky Shlita was in London, and my wife and I went to hear him speak. Here is something he said that moved us deeply and became a motif that has accompanied us through our life ever since. In his younger years, Rav Tversky had wanted to mold himself in the image of his father, a Rav, to whom people went with their problems. But by the time he became a Rav himself, people only wanted rabbis for bar mitzvahs, weddings, and levayas. Now they only took their problems, as I remember he put it, to their shrink. And so, Rabbi Tversky trained as a psychiatrist in order to be what he had wanted to be as a Rav. But then, as a psychiatrist, he encountered an unexpected challenge. People began coming to him saying they were unhappy. He had therapies and treatments for depression, but simple unhappiness hadn't really featured in his training. And what's more, many of these were from Jews, and this really puzzled him. Where was their simchas and mitzvahs, their joy in living a Torah life? Rav Tversky said he remained unable to solve this conundrum and help these people until he found the answer in the writings of Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. Rav Hirsch links the word sameach, happy, joyful, with sameach, to grow, teaching that true happiness is synonymous with spiritual growth and personal fulfillment. Later, I searched for the source for this idea in Rav Hirsch's writings, and I discovered that he makes this point explicitly in several places in his Peirush on Tehillim. Rav Tversky was delighted to discover this insight, which he believed was the solution he had needed. And now he just had to help his clients find their personal roots to inner growth, be it religion, family, music, or whatever else. They had lacked happiness because they had come to a standstill in their lives. They weren't moving, and they weren't growing. They basically needed a jump start to recharge them and help them find simcha again. We do see the link between happiness and spirituality in the thought of Rav Dessler, who says, there's no happiness in the world in material things. There's only happiness in spiritual concerns. But this connection between the words Sameach and Sameach, I found so beautiful, so powerful, yet so simple. And it remained with me. Indeed, it became a motif in our family life, not least because I repeat it at every opportunity. You will also find this idea in Rabbi Twersky's writings. In his book, 10 Steps to Being Your Best, Rabbi Twersky outlines the Sameach link, but then importantly, he emphasizes that it is the process of growing, rather than the end point, that provides happiness. If you manage to hear Rabbi Tatz on happiness, you will notice he also emphasizes the significance of process. So let's now take a brief look at the process of spiritual growth. There is a beautiful commentary of Rabbi Avram Yitzhak of Cohen Cook on the following pasuk, the famous pasuk we say as we come into shul. Ma tovu ohalecha Yaakov mishkanosecha Yisrael. How good are your tents, Yaakov, your dwelling places, Yisrael? The question addressed by Rav Cook is, what is the reason for the apparent repetition in this pasuk, in the mention of two very similar types of shelter, Ohel and Mishkan? Is this merely a poetic device in Bilam's bracha, or is there a deeper significance? In his Siddur, Olas Re'iyah, Rav Cook proceeds to enlighten us, revealing a brilliant and inspirational insight. Here is how Rabbi Chanan Morrison outlines Rav Cook's thoughts on this pasuk in his Siddur Olas Re'iyah. The Ohel and the Mishkan, says Rav Cook, are both forms of temporary shelter. Both relate to the soul's upwards journey spiritually. However, they differ in a significant aspect. The Ohel is inherently connected to the state of traveling, movement. It corresponds to the aspiration for constant change and growth. The Mishkan is also part of the journey, but it is associated with the rests between travels. It is the soul's sense of calm, its rest from the constant movement for the sake of the overall mission. Surprisingly, it's the second method that is the loftier of the two. The desire to change reflects a lower level fear, says Rav Cook, lest we stagnate and deteriorate. Therefore, the bracha mentions tents first, the Ohel first, Ohalecha Yaakov first, together with the name Yaakov, the first and embryonic name of the Jewish people. The need to stop and rest, on the other hand, stems from a higher level fear, lest we overshoot the appropriate level for the soul. For this reason, the bracha mentions Mishkan together with the name Yisrael, Yaakov's second and holier name. In any case, both aspects, says Rav Cook, are required in order to achieve stable spiritual growth. As an aside, if we're saying that both aspects of spiritual growth are needed, Ohel and Mishkan, then we can draw a parallel with their partner names, Yaakov and Yisrael. Because when Yaakov was given the additional name Yisrael, his first name, Yaakov, wasn't thrown away. Both names continued to have meaning and relevance, even though Yisrael was now the more kadosh and the more ruchani of the two. And so we see the Torah refer to Yaakov Avinu with both names at different times. Chassidus teaches that the names Yaakov and Yisrael denote two levels in our Avodas Hashem, in our divine service, that must be found within every Jew. There are times when an individual must serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu in the manner of Yaakov, while at other times he should serve in the manner of Yisrael. The name Yisrael denotes a loftier form of spiritual service, of Avodas Hashem, which enjoys a more direct experience with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, with the Divine. But there were times when the lesser service of Yaakov must be employed. Times, though, when our perception of Hashem is more blurred, less distinct, perhaps a little veiled. This distinction was articulated by the Malach who gave Yaakov the new name Yisrael, as we see in Rashi. Lo yomer od she'abrochos bo lecha ba'akva uvrumia, ki im bisrara uvgalui ponim. It shall no longer be said, said the Malach, that the brachos came to you through trickery, akva, Yaakov, and deceit, but with nobility and openness. So here we see in the words of the Malach the transition, the switch from the lower level Yaakov to the higher level Israel. But returning to our main theme, we have Ohel, which represents a constant movement upwards, driven by the lower level fear, says Rav Kook, that staying still will lead to losing the benefits of any progress we've made on our spiritual journey. And Mishkan, which, writes Rav Kook, represents the all-important rests between journeys, the pauses, and between the stages of our journeys, motivated by the higher fear that we will spiritually overextend ourselves. From this profound interpretation of the Mar Tovu Posuk, from the holy thought of Rav Kook, we learn that each of us is on a spiritual journey. And though the direction is always forwards, always upwards, it's important from time to time to stop, consider, internalize, consolidate. This teaches Rav Kook is the way to ensure that each stage embeds well and lays strong groundwork for advancing further. Now, please keep these thoughts in mind while we turn our attention for a few moments to Bilam HaRasha himself. After all, it was Bilam HaRasha himself who uttered the exalted words in Mar Tovu. But here is an insight which I think you'll agree will combine with what we've said already to shine a spotlight on Bilam that reveals a very ironic flaw in his character. Rabbi Isaac Bernstein, some of you will remember Rabbi Isaac Bernstein explains some fascinating comments of the Chofetz Chaim regarding the fact that there were no gaps in the Torah text of the Balak Bilam narrative, making it one of only a few sidros possessing this characteristic. Most parshos in the Sefer Torah have both psuchos and stumos, the different types of extended spaces on the line of the text. In Parshas Balak, there were neither psuchos nor stumos until the Pinchas story begins at the end of the sidra. The question is, how can it be that even after receiving repeated communications from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, Bilam could remain, as Rabbi Bernstein puts it, exactly as depraved and as morally degenerate and as infatuated with silver and gold at the end of his career as he was at the beginning of his career? Rabbi Bernstein asks, how is it possible that an individual can receive prophetic inspiration from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, the most majestic of experiences that a human being can aspire to, and still remain exactly as he was before? The answer must surely be, says Rabbi Bernstein, and these are his words, that he did not for one moment reflect on this particular phenomenon. He became a conduit for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's words, but it literally passed him by. He refused to be impressed. He refused to recognize. He refused to involve himself in reflection on what this means, that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is there, and realizing what a Kodesh Baruch Hu is, and what his standards are, etc. So what we can say about Bilam HaRasha is that despite the fact that he enjoyed the spirit of Nevuah, he was totally oblivious to any message that such a Nevuah might have for him as a person. Says the Chofetz Chaim, continues Rabbi Bernstein, according to Chazal, the reason why there are psuchos and stumos, why there are gaps in the text, is because Moshe Rabbeinu took a moment to pause and to reflect in between the various stages of Nevuah that were being communicated to him. Therefore, says the Chofetz Chaim, the absence of these gaps in the Parsha of Balak is to indicate to us that despite the fact that Bilam was a Novi who received Nevuah, there was no pause whatsoever in any period of his life, at any moment of his day, for reflection and consideration of exactly what the implications of Nevuah were for him as a person. And Rabbi Bernstein concludes, and those who remember him will be able to hear his voice saying, it's a very, very majestic insight. And now we said above that our observations regarding Bilam will combine with our earlier discussion to leave us understanding Bilam's character in a somewhat ironic light. How so? Let us remind ourselves that it was Bilam HaRosha who taught us the profound lesson that safely climbing one's spiritual ladder demands an appreciation not only of how to advance ever upwards, but also of when it's necessary to take a break, to rest, to reflect, and ensure one's footing is firm before once again looking upwards and ascending further. We learned from Bilam's words a beautiful principle, that we need to manage the desire for growth, lest, as we said, we overshoot the appropriate level for the soul. We can indeed be grateful to Bilam for this sage counsel. However, the same Bilam who gifted us this wise advice didn't apparently follow it himself. Far from recognizing the importance of punctuating life with occasional stops, as we learn from Bilam in Mar Tovu, Bilam never stopped once. In contrast, Moshe Rabbeinu paused regularly, as is evident from the gaps throughout the Torah text. As Rashi says on the first posuk in Vayikra, what are these breaks for us, Rashi? And he answers, Litain revach le Moshe le hisbonein bein parsha le parsha uvein inyon le inyon. To give Moshe Rabbeinu a chance to pause, to contemplate between one passage and the next, and between one subject and another. And so we see that although it was Bilam's own mouth that articulated this wisdom, it didn't infiltrate his actions once. He didn't live by these words. And consequently, his life was not one of spiritual growth, but of inaction, sluggishness, and stagnation. That he regularly spoke with the divine utterances of Nevuah made no impact on him, despite the undeniable connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam himself that Bilam must have enjoyed. The lesson for us then is twofold. First, that a life of spiritual growth must be punctuated with carefully timed and managed pauses, as we learn from Rav Kook. For advancing always onwards and upwards without occasional reflection and consolidation isn't a healthy way to proceed. Achievements in spiritual progress, as we have learned from Rav Kook, must be reinforced. They must be embedded, lest they weaken and fall away. Yes, we need to keep moving, and that's the ohel in our spiritual journey. The Ohalech HaYaakov. But we also need those reflective pauses, the Mishkan Osecha Yisrael. Second, it's each person's duty to recognize, to harness, and capitalize on any connection with the Kodesh Baruch Hu gained along the complex course of his life. We may not be Nevi'im, but we must nevertheless do our best to spot those flashes and flickers of spiritual attachment to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, those sublime and precious moments of Dveikus, and capitalize on them to whatever extent we are able. If we do not do these things, manage our spiritual growth carefully, and notice and make the most of moments of connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam, then Chas V'Shalom, we're making the same mistakes that Bilam made. However, we know from Rav Hirsch, as taught and explained by Rabbi Twersky, that if we get that process of spiritual growth right, we're sure to achieve and enjoy the true happiness and contentment that is born out of deep, genuine self-fulfillment. Friends, even though these difficult months have for many people not seemed particularly conducive to spiritual growth, after all, how can I grow when I'm struggling even to stand still? How can I grow even when I'm struggling to stay where I am? Nevertheless, many have indeed grown. There has been an outpouring of chesed, a flood of tzedakah, a surge in Torah learning. And where individuals grow, families do too, and so do communities. A few years ago, I was blessed with the enormous zechus to meet Rabbi Avram Tversky when a niece of ours married a great-great-nephew of his. I was overjoyed to be able to personally express my hakaras hatov, my gratitude for the somer insight my wife and I learned from him many years earlier. Rabbi Tversky simply looked at me and gave me the most perfect bracha I could have received from him. He simply said, "May you have much simcha and much growth." May we all be zochem in Hashem to deep and lasting spiritual growth and personal fulfillment in our lives, and so the most real and enduring simcha as individuals, as families, and communities. Thank you.
Can I ask you something? You spoke a couple of times about overshooting and overextending, as if there's an upper fear of becoming too good or becoming too high. I understand the lower one, that you're afraid of falling. But what's the problem, the fear of overextending, overshooting, becoming too high, too great?
So this is Rav Kook. I think he calls it the Yira Tachtona and the Yira Eliona, the lower fear and the higher fear. And that's a question of understanding the exact intention of Rav Kook, which I think would probably challenge all of us. But the question was, what does it mean to fear overextending oneself spiritually? So you have the lower fear, which is we're not going to manage to consolidate on the growth, and so we have to keep pushing on. Otherwise, if we stand still, maybe any spiritual growth we've gained is going to be lost. The higher fear, as I understand it, is I think kind of as Rav Kook puts it, I think that it's not that there's an upper limit, as perhaps you were suggesting, is perhaps the fear. I think the fear is that one's ability to grow has to be done in it. One has to grow in a measured way. There's a speed at which one grows. I think Rav Kook is saying that there are steps in growth, and on each, what he's saying is that as we climb a ladder, we shouldn't just continue to climb step after step after step. He says at every step, at every rung, it's important to think about where we are. Because at every stage of spiritual growth, in order to move to the next growth, we have to have a firm footing where we are now. For example, if we take the example of a Baal Teshuva, somebody who's taking on Yiddishkeit, taking on mitzvahs, it's possible to unfortunately, a person can with their enthusiasm, can take on too much, can take on Kashrus and Shabbos and everything all at the same time, and it can be overwhelming, and they find themselves not able to cope with that. Yeah. I think, with the advice of Rabbonim, with Das Torah, one takes on additional spiritual challenges and additional spiritual growth. But at each stage, one has to just pause and think: Where am I now? Am I ready to move on? Am I strong in the mitzvahs that I have now? Am I strong in the spiritual place where I am now? Yeah, I'm strong now. I can move on. I've laid. So I think essentially what he's saying is, at each point on the ladder of spiritual growth, he's saying it's essential to lay foundations which are strong enough for us to stand on and move upwards to the next level.
Great. Thank you. Just get off the things. Yeah.